This is Unscripted, a mental health podcast from Schoen Clinic Mental Health Specialists.
Good afternoon. I'm going to introduce to you all Emma Johnson, who's a family therapist, family psychotherapist at Schoen Clinic.
Good afternoon. I'm going to introduce Dr. Jo Dad, or Jo, who is a paediatrician at Schoen Clinic in Chelsea. How are you doing today, Jo?
Yeah, very well. Busy clinic. Yeah. And yourself?
Yeah, busy and always thinking of the next thing to do.
We had patients this morning. Has there been anything that sort of a highlight from your patients this morning?
Yeah, I had patients this morning and I've also run a group. And I guess this afternoon, moving towards 4 o'clock, what I'm thinking is a lot of people I see, Jo, just don't feel like they have much control at the moment. There's a lot of feeling like the world is very overwhelming. There's a lot of desire to take care of your family in a particular way, but sometimes not feeling able. It's a bit of sense of powerlessness or hopelessness, or actually, that I'm feeling today. Very much connected to world events, but also connected to, well, as we know, it's exam time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the way things are kind of feeling for families, a bit tricky.
Was that therapy with the children and the parents, or was that individual therapy that you're doing?
I saw a family a whole, parents and children, but also sometimes, as many family therapists do, we'll see sort of like component parts of that family, you know, and just to see how things are going for the parents, or see how things are going for the siblings. And sometimes you do that to sort of help bring a little bit of containment, to help increase your understanding of what's going on in the family, help you become more aware of what life is like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I do like much prefer to see families together as a whole. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jo? How was your day gone today?
Very good. I was delivering some feedback for a diagnosis of a child that I recently saw that came over from the Virgin Islands for a diagnosis of ADHD. So I was delivering that feedback via Zoom today. Interestingly, it was only to mum and dad. And like you, I prefer to give feedback with the child because I really like the child to have a voice, because it gives the children an opportunity to really express and be open to something that may not be made. They might be restricted in the home environment or even school environment, but allowing that voice to be heard. I think it's really important. And you touched on the same thing there with the therapy that you do. Engaging with the family, the child is really key, because I think it just allows them to express and maybe open up some doors that the parents weren't aware of before.
I really like this, Jo, I like working with you, because actually you are very strong with this child-focused approach, and that's keeping that child's voice at the heart, keeping the difficulties in mind. But also I found that when I've worked with you, you also keep solutions in mind, and lots of problem-solving. And I guess when I've been working with you, I find that you naturally work systemically. You pay attention to the levels of context, levels of difficulty, whether it's individual, relationship, or just outside there in the world, because it can be really difficult with families. But you pay attention to a lot of the context in which the families live their lives. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if that's been a very conscious thing for you to do, or is that something where your practice has grown? You've wanted to be more systemic?
I think working with children as a paediatrician, Luke, it's not just always the child, it's the parents, the carers, the grandparents, sometimes a nanny. And so it's working with the wider team, because the needs are different for each of those individuals. And sometimes parents may not understand, grandparents may not understand, and you may hear the term, sometimes people say, in my day it was very different. And yes, it was different, but we're here now, and we also need to understand from the child's perspective what's important to them, what stresses are very different to maybe then. And, you know, what even some of the small niggles that might be affecting a child from their daily activities, going to school and things, bullying and other factors that play a part, as well as they, when they come to me, whether they're coming for an acute illness or something that's concerning them in their development at school, is having a wider lens to look at what is affecting them. Because it's not just about, well, they're coming to me for a cough or a cold or a development problem that's there behind in school, but they're also not sleeping. Yeah. So that is almost a cycle of events. They're actually, their daily activities are being affected by not being able to sleep at night. So it affects their concentration and other factors. So I think it's more of a holistic approach to the child and really looking at, okay, one problem may be the issue, what they're coming to me, but it, the impact of that might be wider, not only to themselves, but also to the family.
Yeah.
You know, so if the child's up at night, it's also affecting the parents. The parents aren't sleeping. So, you know, that impacts their working day and so on and so forth. So I think having a wider lens when we think of seeing whether it's children or the condition that their parents are maybe seeking a diagnosis for, but also the supportive element. And as you said, it's not just about a diagnosis. Diagnosis sometimes isn't not as productive if you haven't got solutions and if you haven't got tangible things that the parents can take away and do. And this is probably where the work that you do, Emma, really hones in on the parents, the family, really offering other solutions to what can be done. And I think it might be worth really highlighting, talking about some of those solutions that you do currently at the Schoen and how that might help some of the patients and their parents.
Yeah, I smiled, Joe, when you were talking, because I think there is something about recognising the strengths of a parent, of a child, of a family from the get-go. We don't hone in, do we, when we first meet families on what's this problem? Tell me about that problem. What's this problem? We actually say, who are you?
Yeah.
Who are you? Where do you come from?
Yeah.
How have you got here? How have you kept going to this point? Because we meet families at a point in time. And what's kept you going? So I find, Joe, that we draw on strengths almost from the get-go. We draw upon what that family have been doing well to survive a very complex world or a very sort of unknown dilemma in the family. But what have they done that has allowed them to survive to this point? And then we build on that. Because I guess as a family therapist, what I want families to feel is that they are an expert on their own lives. They're an expert on who they are. They know their children far better than you and I would, Joe.
Yeah.
We see glimpses of that child. Beautiful glimpses they might be, but they're glimpses. But we want the parent to feel like they're the expert and that they have enough skills, knowledge, ideas to get through the issues, to get through the mucky waters, as it were. So I think if we can seize on that and build that strengths-based approach from the get-go, half of our work is often done, Joe. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think if you make families feel at home and rather than just being focused on, right, what is it you're here for, as well as, you know, understanding their journey, what was their journey to, like, they may have some levels of anxiety even when they come through the first door, you know, and sometimes breaking those levels of anxiety down very quickly needs to be established. And then the making them feel at ease to then share what they're here and what the solutions that we can offer. I think the important aspect as well is expectations. I think one of the things I always do with one of the patients is, and parents, what are you expecting from today? And making sure then at the end, did I reach your expectations? Because if you don't really establish the expectations at the start, you could be going down a rabbit hole as such. And actually, the parents came away, they might feel a bit disappointed because we never really understood what they were expecting from that meeting with us when we see them.
Yeah. What I'm hearing, Joe, is that sort of essence of collaborative work from the get-go. What do you need? What are you looking for? And then almost defining what you can help with. Yeah. It makes me think of this very famous family therapist, Barry Mason. Long since gone, Joe, you might have heard of him. Lots of family therapists admire him. And he asked us to sort of take a position of sort of knowledge that the families have ownership on their lives and they are the expert. But we also have some expertise and we should be sharing that with families in order that they know we do know how to help them. So I think in my sort of practice, I will often with very, very stressed families try and give some small knowledges from the get-go. I will draw upon, say, nonviolent resistant techniques or particular family therapy techniques to allow that parent, that family, to leave the room with me that day, knowing that they have a little bit more in their tool bag than they had when they first arrived. But also knowing that I have confidence in them to be that parent and to go forward and use these tools. Do you think that is what we've probably got right here, Joe, that sort of ensuring we are very collaborative with families? We try and meet them where they're at.
I think it's important. I think we do offer that, not only just individually, but as a team.
Yeah.
And I think if we have this multidisciplinary team effort where we discuss the patients, share ideas, and sometimes, you know, sharing those ideas opens up other doors that we can maybe help those patients. And if not within the network at SHOHM, but also sometimes we're all individual practitioners, clinicians, etc., that can actually have contacts that might be able to unlock some other doors for those patients or parents to look at the support. So even as a pediatrician, I'm thinking of the child, plus also there may be some other concerns that might be raised from the parent side. And so there might be other clinicians or practitioners that actually can also support the parents. And I think working together here at the clinic really opens up that. I think you touched on a point, Emma, as well about your MBR that you did. And it might be worth speaking a bit about what that means for parents, children, families, and just talking a bit about what that means. Because for some parents and children, there might be, what is that? What does it mean?
Yeah, yeah.
How does it impact me?
Yeah. I find it a very empowering parent resource, really. A parenting program that's designed to equip parents with skills and knowledge around how to help their family or their child when there have been behaviours, emotions that have become unpleasant, maybe even controlling, maybe some aspects of very, very high anxiety that stops that family going out. Maybe there are aspects of some behaviours where things are getting a little bit smashed up in the house because that child is really struggling to contain their own emotions to self-soothe or regulate. And NBR seeks to empower parents from the get-go and give them, once again, that tool bag, that toolkit of knowledges and skills that they can lean upon in order to help their child and help themselves through the very difficult times. And we use those basic concepts from systemic therapy, things like symmetrical escalation or complementary escalation. So we draw upon what that means. Symmetrical escalation, probably where you and your child are going toe-to-toe. It can only go one way, Joe, the explosion. And maybe the complementary escalation is where you think, I can't face this argument again, so I'm just going to let it go. And the problem with those two types of escalation is the problem's not been solved. So NBR seeks to very much work with parents in understanding these patterns, maybe the beliefs that are underpinning some of the behaviours, beliefs that are underpinning some of the relationships in the family. And it's sort of designed to try and get parents to slow down and then start applying particular tools. One of the great tools, Joe, from NBR is called Strike While the Iron is Cold.
Okay. I want to talk a bit about what that means.
When I meet parents, they're often going in when that fire is hot, Joe. Yeah, there is stress, there's tension. And what happens when we go in at that intensity, Joe, with a child? A further explosion. Maybe the child stops listening. Maybe it's been part of a pattern that you have with your parents where you have these rows and then nothing gets solved. Maybe it's so hot that more behaviour comes forward, more controlling behaviour, even aggression. But what we're not doing is solving anything, just adding fuel to that fire. So one of the things NBR teaches us, and I think it's quite nice to use in my personal life too, Joe, is find the cold moments, find the cool moments, find the moments when you feel stronger or safer, more contained, and when your child looks to be that thing too. And it's those moments that we can use to have the difficult conversations. We strike while the iron is cold. We start off from a more neutral place and we start raising the idea of what's going on in the family. Now, what we don't want to do is raise ideas of what's going on in the family and not take responsibility as parents. So in these conversations, we let the child know that we are very, very, very interested in making changes and working with them. And we let the child know that as parents, we are going to take responsibility for what's happened in the family, but also how that family needs to change. So we let that child know there's no shame, there's no blame. We're going to take charge and we're going to help you move through these very difficult experiences Joe, whether that's anxiety, whether we're thinking about eating issues, whether that's sometimes connected to ASD. Mm-hmm. But what we want the parents is to come forward and take something called a new parental authority. Mm-hmm. And I find that really helpful because I think as a parent, once you've started to shout, say in line with your child, you can often feel like, I've already lost this. I've lost the argument. Mm-hmm. I've lost the argument. So what we try and do is take out the shouting, establish a new parental authority, striking while the iron is cold, connecting before correcting. That's really important. Connect with your child before you correct them. Mm-hmm. And then doing a lot of self-soothing and managing your emotions. How's that sound, Joe?
Sounds very, very soothing. So for both the child and the parents, and I think I like the way that you said striking the iron while it's cold, because it's, if you're doing things in a heated situation, it's probably very counterproductive in terms of you're not really, no one's listening and there's rage coming on. You touched on a point, and I was just thinking of where some of the challenges that you might get with when working with MBR might be if parents are separated.
Yes.
And the child sees mum a couple of days, sees dad a couple of days, and there's a splitting. Mm-hmm. Of can MBR help that kind of family setup? And what is the best approach where the mum and dad maybe have a bit of a broken or fractured relationship with each other, but they come together for the child in some cases, or they don't really, and they're challenging to get branding points with the child? Then children can be very clever. I've seen it where children will manipulate things to like, oh, dad gives me this, mum gives me this. And then the child uses that sort of as a bargaining tool to get more things.
Yeah. Yes, Joe, I know that scenario very well. And I guess, you know, children tend to also be really loyal. Mm-hmm. If we don't look at that push-pull around the child, what we can do is make loyalties that feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I've met children who feel that they have to be very loyal to mum on the day where they're with her, mm-hmm. and very loyal to dad on the day with him. And they can feel almost like they don't mention the other parent. Mm-hmm. And this is a really uncomfortable place for that child to be in. And you know, they're not going to understand really what's going on. Mm-hmm. What I would say is MVR and family therapy does really, really well is it looks at parenting styles. And it looks to see, say, if you've got a child moving between two homes, between dad and dad, mum and mum, or dad and mum, how do your parenting styles align? How do they differ? Mm-hmm. What parenting style might you have? Are you more on the sort of libertarian side? You know, I'm free and easy with what you want to do. Are you more on that authoritative side? You must listen to what I want to do. And if they're not aligned and the child is struggling, say, already with issues of anxiety, that's going to amplify difficulties. From my own experience, it also amplifies difficulties in the parents who are all already trying to work together through their split, but then start to have notions about what the other is doing. So I would say one of the good things about family therapy and MVR is it has open conversations, mm-hmm. and it encourages families to be looking about what's going on in the communication patterns around the child, mm-hmm. and between themselves. What are we feeding into? What meaning are we making of how we act with our child? And where are we trying to get to? You know, what's our intention here? If that child feels very loyal or has got lots of anxiety. So I think one of the really key things we can do is sit with parents and say, should we talking about how you can work together?
Sounds very productive. They're great for the parents, because if the parents can win, sometimes one of the complaints I'll get is the parents will say, my child doesn't listen, they're not paying attention, I'm really struggling to get them to brush their teeth or tidy up their room. And I think some of these win scenarios are discussions of why some of those, why the child's not conforming to what the needs of the parents. It really does help with some of these goals, strategies, so that both parties, both parent and the child, especially as you said, where there's this push-pull from mum and dad maybe on together and then engaging with the child in that scenario, is really helpful. Is there an age where the child and parents from a child perspective would be suitable for something like MVR?
Not particularly. I think it's more widely used with teenagers because teenage sort of more controlling behaviours become a lot more problematic.
Okay.
But no, I think it can be used. I'm currently using it with all age groups. Yeah. And if we think of it as actually being a strengthening and skills-based parenting intervention, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, as you were speaking, I was thinking something about the problem is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see families sometimes, or even individuals, they can feel that their whole life is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that has happened from the small detail to the large events feels problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a child can get sort of swept away in thinking that they are the problem,
mm-hmm.
especially if there are issues at school
yeah.
with friendship groups. Maybe they're arguing with mum or dad.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not tidying their room when they are asked yeah. to. And I start to bring in this idea with parents that the child isn't the problem is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a bit of an externalizing
yeah.
approach, putting some distance between how they're, say, often talking about the child because they're absolutely exhausted, to actually start to notice when that child is doing things that are not about the problem.
Mm.
Noticing the small things that the child is doing,
yeah.
Joe. Laying the table for dinner.
Yeah.
Switching the TV off when they've been asked.
Yeah.
Because when you think that child is the whole problem, I think sometimes you forget to notice that there are exceptions.
Yeah.
Do you see that, Joe?
I agree with you. I think sometimes people focus on the negative sides, yeah. and there's that kind of one bad egg of a dozen, and the focus of, well, we didn't do that,
yeah.
but you forgot about the 11 good eggs that you may have had. And,
yeah.
and I think I always say this to parents is focus on the positives,
yeah.
reward or endorse and say, well done, you know, recognize that this is maybe one step at a time. Yeah. I think I like the bite-sized approach.
Mm.
You know, you don't need to achieve that, you know, all those targets in one day, you know,
yeah.
break it down. And then those good habits grow, they see reward. And I always like coming to a shared goal, because if you get the child to input on those and what it means and why we're doing it,
mm-hmm.
rather than you have to do this and quite demanding, mm-hmm. and it really does home in on actually a sense of achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And those simple things of like, oh, well done today, you've done this. And those become a good habit. And then you get less sort of defiance as such from the child. But also, it's almost a win-win situation for the parents and the child as well.
Yeah, I guess you're encouraging a brand new way of communicating, or a way that perhaps you've always communicated, but you've forgotten because the problem took over.
Yeah.
So we're going back to skills that are always there.
Yeah.
Your parents know to praise their child. Parents know to take notice of what that child does well. But when the problem feels so overwhelming,
mm-hmm.
the communication in the family can be about burden, nothing can change, mm-hmm. we're stuck. But you start noticing the exceptions or the unique outcomes, and we see a different feedback, don't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So parents start to feel a little bit like confident, Joe, or competent again.
Yeah, I think it's a sense of maybe control where they feel... Where they feel like, okay, we're having good days now,
mm.
and it's not a battle,
mm.
you know, and it's a productive day,
mm.
and they can get on with their normal sort of daily routines. You know, the child feels happier, the parents feel happy, and it is a level that they've both. But then, you know, this is life, and I think there's always a roller coaster. There'll be undue amount of stress that will add to it, and I find that with some of the ADHD patients that I have.
Mm.
Where the parents will say, oh, the I think the medication's not working. And some of these ADHD medicines, they're not cures. They help alleviate some of the symptoms. So whether it's inattention or things like that. But if a child gets overwhelmed, whether it's stress at school, stress at peers, examinations, stress at home, then no matter what medication you have, you're still going to get overwhelmed by that situation. And so the automatic response for some parents is, oh, it's not working anymore. It's not. It's about actually understanding that there are multiple things going on. And like with anything, whether you've got ADHD or not, those symptoms are causing levels of anxiety, causing stress.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just have to ride through that wave of actually understanding what the problem is,
yeah.
working through the problem. And then things generally, most of the time, do settle down. And it's just that period of stress. And then other things like hormones can play a part when you're going through puberty. you know, there can be a change, both for male and females, that can cause a change in the variation of the mood, and those factors can also play a part.
Yeah.
So it's, again, looking at just not just thinking about, okay, jumping to reaction, but breaking things down and going, right, what is going on? What are the changes that have happened in that child's life or even the parent's life that have affected the child to why there may be a level of greater anxiety? Mm-hmm. Or even in some cases I mentioned, people saying, oh, the medicines aren't working.
Sounds like you really try and open up the problem to kind of multiple ideas of what the problem could be, or multiple solutions.
Absolutely.
It also sounds, Joe, that you very nicely look for lots of opinions on what the problem could be.
Absolutely.
And I kind of know from working with you that you're not invested in diagnosis per se.
Mm-hmm.
You use it as part of your plethora of treatments and knowledges, but you also look to see what else is going on for that child.
Sure.
If I can clumsily connect this to a question, Joe, if you wouldn't mind, is that sort of you building resiliences and hope, I wonder, for that child and that family through the problems, and also opening up the problems up to other explanations?
I think you put it in a nice way, Emma. I think it's saying I'm a big fan of preventive medicine.
Yeah.
Rather than here's a diagnosis, off you go.
Yeah.
And looking at the problem, you know, more of a holistic approach of this is not just you've got these set of signs and symptoms, it must be this. Having a wider angle allows you to actually think of, right, what else is going on? Why are these symptoms presenting as they are now? Is this an acute presentation?
Mm.
Generally, acute presentation could be anything from 3 months to 6 months. Or if it's longer than 6 months, maybe a chronic presentation, and actually this is more long-standing. And one of the things you highlighted, I think sometimes parents say to me, well, they were okay a year ago, or they were okay up until GCSE and now they're doing an IB or A-levels and they kind of go, they're really struggling. In actual fact, when you dissect it and really look back down to the history, they actually always struggled, but it just wasn't, they were coasting. And so when you really look at it, they may have been masking a certain feeling, or they may have just been coasting from a level and they've got to the grades of where they are.
Mm.
But actually, deep-rootedly, there were always issues. So having a wider angle lens when looking at these children is really important, because you've then got, okay, is it just that problem or are there other things? And then it does open up more ideas of like, ah, oh, right, it's that penny drop sort of scenario.
Yeah.
That, yeah, actually, you're right. And so those things really help in understanding. And then changes can be made, because it allows the parents to then say, "Ah, right, you're right. This is what we did do. These were the changes. And this is why it's happened." Whether it's a change of school or a change of they've moved house, all these things can also add stress, or move country, for example. Friendships are lost and other things. So it's multitude of factors that can cause, whether it's anxiety or even sometimes a cough coming on. You know, can present in that way.
Thank you for joining Dr. Joe Datt and Emma Johnson for the first part of this episode. Stay tuned for part two coming soon, and be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes from our Schoen Clinic specialists.